Chapter 2.
"Right down here," the echoey voice said, as the Baudelaire orphans began their journey down the ladder.
"Aye, mind the ladder. Close the hatch behind you. Don't rush. No, take your time. Don't fall. Mind your step. Aye, don't trip. Don't make noise. Don't scare me. Don't look down. No, look where you're going. Don't bring any flammable liquids with you. Watch your feet. Aye. No, watch your back. No, watch your mouth. No, watch yourselves. Aye."
"Aye,"
Sunny whispered to her siblings. "Aye," Klaus explained quietly, "is another word for yes."
"Aye," the voice said again. "Keep your eyes open. Look out below. Look out above. Look out for spies. Look out for one another. Look out. Aye, be very careful. Be very aware. Be very much. Take a break. No, keep going. Stay awake. Calm down. Cheer up. Keep climbing. Keep your shirt on. Aye."
As desperate as their situation was, the Baudelaires almost found themselves giggling. The voice was shouting out so many instructions, and so few of them made sense, that it would have been impossible for the children to follow them, and the voice was quite cheerful and a bit scattered, as if whoever was talking did not really care if their instructions were followed, and had probably forgotten them already.
"Hold on to the railing," the voice continued,
as the Baudelaire spotted a light at the end of the passageway.
"Aye! No, hold on to yourselves. No, hold on to your hats. No, hold on to your hands. No, hold on. Wait a minute. Wait a second. Stop waiting. Stop war. Stop injustice. Stop bothering me. Aye."
Sunny had been the first to enter the passageway, and so she was the first to reach the bottom and lower herself carefully into a small, dim room with a very low ceiling. Standing in the centre of the room was an enormous man, dressed in a shiny suit made of some sort of slippery-looking material, with equally slippery-looking boots on his feet. On the front of the suit was a portrait of a man with a beard, although the man himself had no beard. Merely a very long moustache, curled up at both ends like a pair of parentheses.
"One of you is a baby," he cried,
as Klaus and Violet lowered themselves next to their sister.
"Aye! No, both of you are babies. No, there's three of you. No, none of you are babies. Well, one of you, sort of, is a baby. Welcome. Aye. Hello. Good afternoon. Howdy. Shake my hand. Aye."
The Baudelaires hurriedly shook the man's hand, which was covered in a glove made of the same slippery material.
"My name is Violet B—" Violet started to say.
"Baudelaire," the man interrupted. "I know. I'm not stupid. Aye, and you're Klaus and Sunny. You're the Baudelaires, the three Baudelaire children. Aye, the ones the Daily Punctilio blames for every crime they can think of, but you're really innocent, but nevertheless in a big heap of trouble. Of course, nice to meet you in person, so to speak. Let's go. Follow me. Aye."
The man whirled around and stomped out of the room, leaving the bewildered Baudelaires little else to do but follow him down a corridor. The corridor was covered in metal pipes that ran along the walls, floor, and ceiling, so that the Baudelaires sometimes had to duck or step very high in order to make their way. Occasionally, drops of water would drip from one of the pipes and land on their heads, but they were already so damp from the stricken stream that they scarcely noticed. Besides, they were far too busy trying to follow what the man was saying to think of anything else.
"Let's see. I'll put you to work right away. Aye. No. First, I'll give you a tour. No. I'll give you lunch. No. I'll introduce you to my crew. No. I'll let you rest. No, I'd better get you into uniforms. Aye, it's important that everyone aboard wear a waterproof uniform in case the submarine collapses and we find ourselves underwater. Of course, in that case, we'll need diving helmets, except
Sunny, because she can't wear one. I guess she'll drown. No, she can just curl up inside a diving helmet. Aye. The helmets have a tiny door on the neck, just for such a purpose. Aye. I've seen it done. I've seen so many things in my time.
Excuse me, Violet said, but, could you tell us who you are?
The man whirled around to face the children and held his hands up over his head.
What? He roared. You don't know who I am? I've never been so insulted in my life.
No, I have. Many times, in fact.
I remember when Count Olaf turned to me and said in that horrible voice of his,
No, never mind, I'll tell you.
I'm Captain Widdershins. That's spelt W-I-D-D-E-R-S-H-I-N-S. Backward, it's S-N-I-H-S-R.
Well, never mind. Nobody spells it backward, except people who have no respect for the alphabet, and they're not here, are they?
No, Klaus said. We have a great deal of respect for the alphabet.
I should say so, the captain cried. Klaus Baudelaire disrespect the alphabet? Why, it's unthinkable. Aye, it's illegal. It's impossible. It's not true. How dare you say so?
No, you didn't say so. I apologize. 1,000 pardons.
Aye.
Is this your submarine, Captain Widdershins? Violet asked.
What?
The captain roared.
You don't know whose submarine it is?
A renowned inventor like yourself, and you haven't the faintest sense of basic submarine history.
Of course this is my submarine. It's been my submarine for years. Aye.
Have you never heard of Captain Widdershins and the Queequeg? Have you never heard of the submarine Q and its crew of two? That's a little nickname I made up myself. With a little help, aye. I would think Josephine would have told you about the Queequeg. After all, I patrolled Lake Lacrimose for years. Poor Josephine. There's not a day I don't think of her. Aye. Except some days when it slips my mind.
Not Tutti?
Sunny asked.
I was told it would take me some time to understand everything you said, the captain said, looking down at Sunny.
I'm not sure I'll find the time to learn another foreign language. Aye.
Perhaps I could enroll in some night classes.
What my sister means, Violet said quickly, is that she's curious how you know so much about us.
How does anyone know anything about anything?
The captain replied. I read it, of course.
Aye!
I've read every volunteer factual dispatch I've received, although lately I haven't received any. Aye, that's why I'm glad you happened along. Aye. I thought I might faint when I peered through the periscope and saw your damp little faces staring back at me. Aye. I was sure it was you, but I didn't hesitate to ask you the password. Aye, I never hesitate. Aye, that's my personal philosophy.
The captain stopped in the middle of the hallway and pointed to a brass rectangle that was attached to a wall. It was a plaque, a word which here means metal rectangle with words carved on it, usually to indicate that something important has happened on the spot where the rectangle is attached. The plaque had a large VFDI carved into the top, watching over the words, "The Captain's Personal Philosophy," carved in enormous letters, but the Baudelaires had to lean in close to see what was printed beneath it.
"He who hesitates is lost!" the captain cried, pointing at each word with a thick, gloved finger.
"Or she," Violet added, pointing to a pair of words that someone had added in scratchy handwriting.
"My stepdaughter added that," Captain Widdershins said, "and she's right. Or she." One day I was walking down this very hallway, and I realized that anyone can be lost if they hesitate. A giant octopus could be chasing you. And if you decide to pause for a moment and tie your shoes, what would happen? All would be lost. That's what would happen. Aye. That's why it's my personal philosophy. I never hesitate. Never. Aye.
Well, sometimes I do, but I try not to, because he or she who hesitates is lost. Let's go. Without hesitating a moment longer at the plaque, Captain Widdershins whirled around and led the children further down the corridor, which echoed with the odd sound of his waterproof boots each time he took a step. The children were a bit dizzy from the captain's chatter, and they were thinking about his personal philosophy, and whether or not it ought to be their personal philosophies as well. Having a personal philosophy is like having a pet marmoset, because it may be very attractive when you acquire it, but there may be situations when it will not come in handy at all. He or she who hesitates is lost sounded like a reasonable philosophy at first glance, but the Baudelaires could think of situations in which hesitating might be the best thing to do. Violet was glad she'd hesitated when she and her siblings were living with Aunt Josephine. Otherwise, she might never have realized the importance of the peppermints she found in her pocket. Klaus was glad he'd hesitated at Heimlich Hospital. Otherwise, he might never have thought of a way to disguise Sunny and himself as medical professionals so they could rescue Violet from having unnecessary surgery. And Sunny was glad she'd hesitated outside Count Olaf's tent on Mount Fraught. Otherwise, she might never have overheard the name of the last safe place, which the Baudelaire still hoped to reach. But despite all these incidents, in which hesitation had been very helpful, the children did not wish to adopt "he or she who does not hesitate is lost" as their personal philosophy, because a giant octopus might come along at any moment, particularly when the Baudelaires were on board a submarine, and the siblings would be very foolish to hesitate if the octopus were coming after them. Perhaps, the Baudelaires thought, the wisest personal philosophy concerning hesitation would be, sometimes he or she should hesitate, and sometimes he or she should not hesitate. But this seemed far too long and vague to be much use on a plaque.
"Maybe if I hadn't hesitated," the captain continued, "the Queequeg would have been repaired by now. Aye. The submarine Q and its crew of two is not in the best of shape, I'm afraid. Aye. We've been attacked by villains and leeches, by sharks and realtors, by pirates and girlfriends, by torpedoes and angry salmon. Aye."
He stopped at a thick metal door, turned to the Baudelaires and sighed.
"Everything from the radar mechanisms to my alarm clock is malfunctioning. Aye. That's why I'm glad you're here, Violet Baudelaire. We're desperate for someone with mechanical smarts."
"I'll see what I can do," Violet said.
"Well, take a look,"
Captain Widdershins cried, and swung open the door. The Baudelaires followed him into an enormous, cavernous room that echoed when the captain spoke. There were pipes on the ceiling, pipes on the floor, and pipes sticking out of the walls at all angles. Between the pipes was a bewildering array of panels with knobs, gears, and tiny screens, as well as tiny signs saying things like "Danger," "Warning," and "He or she who hesitates is lost." Here and there were a few green lights, and at the far end was an enormous wooden table piled with books, maps, and dirty dishes, which stood beneath an enormous porthole, a word which here means round window through which the Baudelaires could see the filthy waters of the stricken stream.
"This is the belly of the beast," the captain said. "Aye, It's the centre of all operations aboard the Queequeg. This is where we control the submarine, eat our meals, research our missions, and play board games when we're tired of working."
He strode over to one panel and ducked his head beneath it.
"Fiona," he called, "come out of there."
There was a faint rattling sound, and then the children saw something race out from under the panel and halfway across the floor. In the dim green light, it took a moment to see it was a girl, a bit older than Violet, who was lying face up on a small wheeled platform. She was wearing a suit, just like Captain Widdershin's, with the same portrait of the bearded man on the front, and had a flashlight in one hand and a pair of pliers in the other. Smiling, she handed the pliers to her stepfather, who helped her up from the platform as she put on a pair of eyeglasses with triangular frames.
"Baudelaire's," the captain said, "this is Fiona, my stepdaughter. Fiona, this is Violet, Klaus, and Sonny Baudelaire."
"Charmed," she said,
extending a gloved hand first to Violet, then to Klaus, and finally to Sonny, who gave Fiona a big toothy smile.
"I'm sorry I wasn't upstairs to meet you. I've been trying to repair this telegram device, but electrical repair work is not my specialty."
"Aye," the captain said. "For quite some time we've stopped receiving telegrams, but Fiona can't seem to make heads or tails of the device. Violet, get to work."
"You'll have to forgive the way my stepfather speaks," Fiona said, putting an arm around him. "It can take some getting used to."
"We don't have time to get used to anything," Captain Widdershins cried. "This is no time to be passive. He who hesitates is lost."
"Or she,"
Fiona corrected quietly.
"Come on, Violet, I'll get you a uniform. If you're wondering whose portrait is on the front, it's Herman Melville."
"He's one of my favourite authors," Klaus said. "I really enjoy the way he dramatizes the plight of overlooked people, such as poor sailors or exploited youngsters, through his strange, often experimental, philosophical prose."
"I should have known you liked him," Fiona replied. "When Josephine's house fell into the lake, my stepfather and I managed to save some of her library before it became too soaked. I read some of your decoding notes, Klaus. You're a very perceptive researcher."
"Very kind of you to say so," Klaus said. "Aye," the captain cried. "A perceptive researcher is just what we need."
He stomped over to the table and lifted a pile of papers.
"A certain taxi driver managed to smuggle these charts to me," he said. "But I can't make head or tail of them. They're confusing. They're confounding. They're conversational. No, that's not what I mean."
"I think you mean convoluted," Klaus said, peering at the charts. "Conversational means having to do with conversations, but convoluted means complicated. What kind of charts are they?"
"Tidal charts," the captain cried. "We have to figure out the exact course of the predominant tides at the point where the stricken stream meets the sea. Klaus, I want you to find a uniform, and then get to work immediately. Aye."
"Aye,"
Klaus said, trying to get into the spirit of the Queequeg.
"Aye,"
the captain answered in a happy roar.
"Aye?"
Sonny asked.
"Aye," the captain said. "I haven't forgotten you, Sonny. I'd never forget Sonny. Never in a million years. Not that I will live that long, particularly because I don't exercise very much. But I don't like exercising, so it's worth it. Why, I remember when they wouldn't let me go mountain climbing because I hadn't trained properly, and..."
"Perhaps you should tell Sonny what you have in mind for her to do," Fiona said gently.
"Of course, the captain cried. Naturally.
Our other crewman has been in charge of cooking, but all he does is make these terrible damp casseroles. I'm tired of them. I'm hoping your cooking skills might improve our meal situation.
Souse,
Sunny said modestly, which meant something like, I haven't been cooking for very long, and her siblings were quick to translate.
Well, we're in a hurry,
the captain replied, walking over to a far door marked kitchen.
We can't wait for Sunny to become an expert chef before getting to work. He or she who hesitates is lost.
He opened the door and called inside.
Cookie, get out here and meet the Baudelaires.
The children heard some quiet, uneven footsteps, as if the cook had something wrong with one leg, and then a man limped through the door, wearing the same uniform as the captain and a wide smile on his face.
Baudelaires,
he said.
I always believed I would see you again some day.
The three siblings looked at the man and then at one another in stupefaction, a word which here means amazement at seeing a man for the first time since their stay at Lucky Smell's lumber mill, when his kindness toward them had been one of the few positive aspects of that otherwise miserable chapter in their lives.
Phil! Violet cried. What on earth are you doing here?
He's the second of our crew of two,
the captain cried.
Aye. The original second in the crew of two was Fiona's mother, but she died in a manatee accident quite a few years ago.
I'm not so sure it was an accident,
Fiona said.
Then we had Jacques,
the captain continued.
Aye. And then, what's his name? Jack's brother. And then a dreadful woman who turned out to be a spy. And finally we have Phil. Although I like to call him Kooky. I don't know why.
I was tired of working in the lumber industry, Phil said. I was sure I could find a better job, and look at me now. Cook on a dilapidated submarine. Life keeps on getting better and better.
You always were an optimist, Klaus said.
We don't need an optimist, Captain Widdershin said. We need a cook. Get to work, Baudelaires, all of you. Aye, we have no time to waste. He who hesitates is lost.
Or she,
Fiona reminded her stepfather.
And do we really have to start right this minute? I'm sure the Baudelaires are exhausted from their journey. We could spend a nice quiet evening playing board games.
Board games? The captain said in astonishment. Amusements? Entertainments? We don't have time for such things. Aye, today's Saturday, which means we only have 5 days left. Thursday is the VFD gathering, and I don't want anyone at the Hotel Denouement to say the Queequeg has not performed its mission.
Mission?
Sunny asked.
Aye, Captain Widdershin said. We mustn't hesitate. We must act. We must hurry. We must move. We must search. We must investigate. We must hunt. We must pursue. We must stop occasionally for a brief snack. We must find that sugar bowl before Count Olaf does. Aye!